am on the East Coast, Guy Adami. Don't worry about a thing. An hour later, I apologize. I had something going on. Dan's not here. Dan's actually at the Masters in Augusta. But Carter Worth is joining us, IRL, as the kids say, to guide us through the final 2 hours of the trading day. Carter, how are you?
I'm good and glad to be here. And, well, the Masters, that's a nice afternoon.
I would say. I think he's there for the weekend. I'm not sure, but that's pretty highbrow stuff. You and I are still working, Stiffs, but
someone needs to do it.
Neither here nor there. Market call, again, thank you for indulging us with the later start. I had a prior engagement, but here we are. And I tell you, it's like the song, Carter, what a difference a day make. But let's take a look at our rundown because Jacob is having a ball today. Quarter one earnings season on the tee. See what he did there? That's a golf reference, obviously. XLF trade in the fairway. What's the next play? That's the trade that Dan put on the other day. Are U.S. consumers in the hazard? I like that. That's a rough one. See what I did there? And we have a question. We have a bunch of questions we'll answer. We'll effort them for sure, but we have one for sure we'll get to. But let's go right to it. Let's take a look at the S&P 500 because, you know, yesterday made a lot of sense to me, Carter, in terms of the breakdown. Today, not so much, but this is what I will say, and I'm just curious. You brought some charts along as well. But, you know, we've been drawing this uptrend line. That trend line, vis-a-vis duration, if nothing else, has been broken. Obviously, with each passing day, if the market would just go sideways, that uptrend line will be broken. And that's what's happened. You see the 200-day moving average all there lonely by itself. You know, we've thought for a while this is going to be a mean reversion thing. But, you know, make sense of, again, the last couple of days, if there is any sense to be made.
Yeah, what's interesting, of course, if we were zero in on this, actually just make it maybe even just a 2 or 3 month chart. What we see here, of course, we're unch now for a month, right? So this small rolling over, hooking down part, it was Friday, March 8th, and we are at the exact same level now here, April 11th. So a full 20 sessions later, and we are unch. Now, it's one of two things. Everybody knows this. Even saying it is absurd. It's either the pause that refreshes, right? And then the advance continues, or it is a stall that gives rise to yet more downside. And it's truly a jump ball. I'm in the stall rollover camp, but you know that has not worked 1 month, 3 months, 6 months. And so at some point, sure, we'll get a proper check back, a proper reset of the equity market. But for now, this has just been another benign little lull.
That's the S&P. The NASDAQ 100 is similar, but not exactly similar. To me, this looks more as if we're sort of topping and rolling. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. You will see that last precipitous sell-off got us down to the moving average, which we stopped on a dime. And as you say all the time, all moving averages effectively is a trend line. And you can see it as clear as day. I mean, I'm paraphrasing some of your work. I don't mean to, but here we are. Very similar chart. I look at it a tad differently. Thoughts on this, if any?
Well, it is sideways for longer than a month, right? So the Qs have stalled. Their relative performance to the S&P as now almost 6 weeks of underperformance. And at this point, it too is a question, is this just a rest that allows for the next advance, or is it the stall that seems inevitable, and yet we haven't had one in so long. My hunch is to reduce exposure to equities generally.
The one that I can't really figure out has been the Russell. So we look at it through the form of the IWM. I mean, there are a number of different ways. That 206 level, 207 level had been resistance. As we're sitting here today, it's trading either side of 202.5. I mean, if you were to do a longer term chart, you will see exactly what we've been looking at. I mean, this level of resistance we've been up against the last year and a half or 2 years in the form of, you know, this level right here. So you see it, the optimists will say, you know what, we've been building this base. We're about to take off. And that might be very well be the case, catch up trade. People like me will say, you know what, we have not been able to get out of our own way here. Now, this might be a pair of twos. This might be a complete jump ball, but is there any importance whatsoever to this?
Well, that's just it. I think the pair of twos is the circumstance that best describes this chart. If we didn't know what it was, and we said, when you said that's a one-year chart of a stock, and we're not going to say whether it's software, or soda water, or sushi, or sneakers, there's nothing about that pattern that would say, I gotta get some of that. I gotta buy that. And in turn, What about that pattern would make you say, I got to short that? It's just sometimes, or quite often, a stock, a currency, a commodity index is not in a particular position where an inflection point is imminent. And I think that's just it.
You know, it's what's interesting to me, in the face of yields going higher, this is actually this being the Russell, the IWM, is held in there pretty well. I mean, all things being equal. I would have thought, incorrectly, obviously, that, you know, if rates had gotten to this point, the IWM would have breached sort of that 195 level, and we'd be pushing down towards the support levels that we've seen a number of times as well. That's not happening. Again, I can't speak to the reasons why. We're going to learn a lot more probably when we start getting bank earnings, because as you know, so many of the components of the small caps of Russell are small and mid-sized banks. So as they go, to a certain extent, the IWM goes, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens, obviously, over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and then there are, well, when one owns something long or short and is involved, that stock matters. But the truth is, this entire index, in many ways, doesn't matter. Half the companies, a third of them, mm-hmm. are profitless. And the total market cap of all 2,000 is below that of Apple and Microsoft.
Think about that.
Think about that, right? And so one could say it's just not where the AUM is. It's just not where the capital is. It's not where Americans' enterprise and future is. It's with the bigger. All of that notwithstanding, if you have a small stock, you got to get the pattern right. You got to get the fundamentals right, and you got to try to make your money.
Yeah, with that, I agree with everything you just said. But is it a sentiment indicator to the extent that people look and say, ah, small caps through the lens of the IWM, they're finally starting to participate on the upside. Maybe I can feel better about this. So understanding the importance of them in terms of earnings, in terms of market cap, is not that great. Is it a greater importance just in terms of potentially what the tell could be for the broader market?
Well, the thought always has been that lower quality, smaller capitalization stocks are higher beta, typically they are, and therefore they're a measure of risk, whether people are embracing it or not. And then in turn, this then makes this one of the most unusual circumstances that from the October 2022 low, small caps in typically any period of strength for the market, small caps have not led. And that's what you get coming off the 09 low. Mm-hmm. You get that coming off the 2000.com low. And so peaked the trough. And that's not happened this time.
I made a big deal about a week or so ago. I thought I saw something. I still think I do, by the way. And it's coming in the form of the VIX. And just to be crystal clear, we are not suggesting people trade the VIX. That's not the point. But the VIX started to show signs of being interesting, moving higher the last couple weeks or so. The last couple days, we've actually seen volatility in the volatility index. I mean, yesterday specifically, we saw some huge moves to the upside and the downside. Now, today, it's obviously lower on the back of a higher market. And I'm not asking you to sort of chart the VIX, but is there any tell here whatsoever, or am I making too much? And if I'm making too much of it, please say, but I think there's signs that the VIX is starting to, I don't know, emerge from a nap.
Well, that's right. Percolate, come to life in some way, showing that perhaps it's ready to jump. If we did pull this back a little further, maybe even a 5-year, just to put this in perspective, we know that we are at a very low level, generally speaking, for the VIX. It doesn't mean it can't go lower, but there you have it. I mean, that spike, of course, is the real push higher there, COVID. Mm-hmm. And then here we are now. So I think it seems asymmetrical. You have that bet on. Again, whether you do it through the VIX or not, and there's those double, triple counter things are no good, the VXX and so forth. But the implication, and I think that's what you're saying, guys, that maybe this is got like a little pop coming.
Seemingly. I'm trying to pay close attention. I understand today, and I understand as we head into, things sort of happen, but you know, there are also factors out there that I don't think the VIX is taking into consideration, although the last couple of days, it may. Obviously, there's some chatter about Iran and Israel. We're not hoping, trust me when I tell you, we're not hoping for anything like that. But that is out there in terms of people talking about it. Dollar yen, to me, is a huge warning sign for the broader market that I don't think the VIX is fully taking into consideration. So we'll see. Obviously, we look at this every day. We will continue to do so. But I wanted to get your thoughts. The other thing that a lot of people are watching clearly is this move in yields and the move from sort of 3.8 to 4.25 pause. You know, now here we are a little bit north of 4.5%. I find it interesting. I'll also say, full disclosure, that if you had said to me 2 or 3 weeks ago that, you know, by April 11th, the VIX would be, excuse me, the 10-year yields would be either side of 4.5%, and then you say, okay, where's the S&P going to be? I would have said the S&P is probably either side of 4,700-ish. So I don't know, what is that, 400 or so points lower? That's clearly not the case. So in that regard, the market is seemingly looking past this. But what are your thoughts on yields here in terms of the implication for the broader market?
Right. We're at a level where, just as you said, one would think that the equity market would have sold off. It basically has not. It's gone sideways for a month. Maybe it's digesting and coping with this tick up. But then do we make the inference that the markets, equity markets, very calm reaction to this is the equity market basically predicting that this actually isn't going higher and that this is kind of where this stops? Because surely if we are going to five, let's say, which isn't that far from here, the equity market would be unhappy about that and would foresee it and would start to sell off in anticipation of it. And so if one believes in the discounting mechanism that is the collective wisdom that is the S&P 500, the message one could take away is that this move up in rates is not going much more, because the equity market, the all-seeing, knowing equity market, the collective wisdom of all market participants, is basically not worried.
I like that take. It's an interesting one. I mean, historically, people say that, you know, the bond market leads the equity market. To a certain extent, you know, the equity market, may, to your point, may be saying, you know what, this is a bit of a head fake here. We're going to sort of mean revert like most things do, and we're okay. You know, we're on stable ground in terms of the equities. I wonder, though, just to push back, is there a point, do you see, technically or otherwise, is there a sort of some line of demarcation where the equity market says, wait a second, you know, maybe we, I thought it'd be lower than this, by the way. I thought it'd be, you know, 4.25, the market would start waking up. That didn't happen. You know, 4.75%, the prior high we saw in October.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a lot of clients that are in this camp. Hey, if it stays 3.5 to 4.5,
we're okay.
It's we're okay. You go to 5 and higher, we got a problem one way. You drop below 3.5, we got a problem another way. And that this is the Goldilocks moment. The other thing to consider is that while we are higher right now, we're not that much higher than where we were from the spike of 2 years ago. So if we pulled this back to a 2-year chart, and you'll see where we're forgetting this brief push to 5%. We haven't really, we're not really meaningfully higher than where we were 2 years ago. And so the market could also be saying, look, the whole notion, rates higher, higher for longer. The 10-year yield is 4.5%. Right. That is not high.
That's right.
So the market would also be saying, hey, it really never got to the 6 and 7 that people were so worried about.
So see, I always thought, for me, and you're right to talk, and you're talking in absolute terms. I was talking, you know, I look at it through more the rate of change, but the market is clearly not interested in rate of change. The market has come to grips with absolute levels. So I think you make a great point, which leads us, the reason why we're talking about rates specifically is obviously tomorrow we're getting all these banks. So let's look at what's reporting tomorrow. JP Morgan, Citi, Wells Fargo, BlackRock's a little different animal. I look at it a couple of ways. A lot of people very positive on Citi. I think a month or two ago, there was an analyst that came out, thought Citi could double from its current level. We'll see if that plays out. You know, I thought it could rally, but not, it wasn't going to be a double. But JP Morgan, if we throw up a chart real quick, and then we're going to look at your charts. JP Morgan, to me, again, let me emphasize, it's the most, probably the most important bank in the world, without question. Everybody waxes poetic about Jamie Dimon, but you know, very quietly, it's gotten itself pretty expensive through the lens that I look at. That's priced to tangible book. And, you know, you're probably approaching, I don't know, almost 2.4 times price to tangible book, which historically is sort of the upper end of things. It has had a ridiculous run to the upside. By the way, this is a bank. This is not a technology stock. This is not a biotech stock. I know you know this, but typically banks don't have dramatic moves like we've been seeing over the last couple of months. With that said, the fact that the market is only pricing in like a 3% move either way in earnings, I find that fascinating. So that's me. Let's take a look at the charts you brought, because you look at it through the lens of a couple different things, KBW versus Spider and those types of things in the KRE. Right. Let's take a look.
But to your point, but JP Morgan's up almost 50%.
Yeah.
And it's as it's not AI. They still, it's a highly leveraged business that's highly cyclical. Banks are. And just as you make a point, when banks are acquired, they're acquired based on a multiple of book. And this is towards the upper end. Anyway, let's look at something. So two colors, two lines, that's always the idea to make it optically clear. And this is, of course, the BKX index versus the KRE. Now, all the banks in the KRE, I don't think even add up to the market cap of JP Morgan. But the notion here is that there's been so much underperformance on the part of KRE. It's not really that true. As you can see, this is a one-year chart. Let's pull this back a little further. There's a three-year chart. I think we might have a five-year chart. And so, you know, at the end of the day, there isn't that much except for this most recent period. And that's because we had that regional bank sort of fallout, everyone take their money out crisis of what, exactly a year ago, yes? And so at this point, still I would favor the big banks over the small banks just because that's what I think the quality play is here. But one way to annotate the situation is this. This is the BKX index. It has that really quite beautiful double bottom.
Absolutely. And you discussed that. I remember at the time we had talked about that, but please.
Yeah. And now we've had this big run, but the run leaves the index at a level of considerable overhead supply. And now, just now, ever so slightly, we're starting to break that uptrend line. There is support immediately below, but here and now, I think there's no real trade. I certainly wouldn't buy the dip yet if one's looking to get long.
I go back to February. If your eye can look at this, folks, that huge dramatic, we call this a line job in the business, but obviously that precipitous drop that we saw last year for the reasons that Carter just talked about. You know, we found ourselves with a gap to the downside in that chart, if I'm not mistaken, for obvious reasons. I think, and you can correct me, but I think this recent spike probably almost filled that downside gap, which, you know, you say it all the time. Gaps are created to be filled. It doesn't have to happen in a week, a month, a year. But historically, that's what happens. And, you know, my eye looks at this and says, that's pretty interesting. You know, you've had this dramatic rise. Probably filled this gap from a year or so ago. Let's see what happens now. And this uptrend line that you've drawn has been violated. You know, we'll see. Let's put it this way. I think this is just my take. If you've enjoyed this run to the upside, I think you're almost required to do something, whether take profits, sell upside calls, buy down, do something, make your feet move, because to do nothing at this point in the cycle doesn't make sense to me.
100%.
And now you've drawn the next chart we have, by the way, is a KRE. And this is a bit of a pennant formation. Now, I'll say again, you know, we drew this pennant formation in a number of different stocks. The most recent one we did was Tesla. And we thought, you know, that pennant was coming into play. The ranges became more narrow and more narrow. We thought it would break to the downside. That one we got right. Here is another pennant formation, now in an ETF, not an individual name.
Yes, and importantly, three circumstances that are different from the BKX. So the first is, if we went to the BKX chart, let's go back and forth. The BKX chart, the weakness of, let's hold the BKX there, the weakness of this past October took us all the way to the prior low. Yes, a double bottom. Look at the KRE. KRE never went back and revisited that low. So the KRE has been relatively better until this most recent effort. And this most recent effort, it never got back to the unfilled gap, right? So it was stronger off the low, not making double bottom, but its move was weaker than the BKX. And now we sit here and truly it's a moment of equilibrium, right? A standoff between bears and bulls, and something will come along to resolve it. My hunch is that this is less desirable, again, than the BKX. They're both, though, have a bit of an issue. The BKX is too steep and needs to correct. This one is sort of flagging, faltering, and has risk of breaking down.
It's interesting. And, you know, I say this, you say it in the same way, but probably using different language. But if you don't have a view here, and there's no reason to have a view here, let price be your guide to a certain extent. So, you know, I say price is truth a lot. People push back on me on that. But my point is, at certain times, the only thing you have to base a decision on when you're trading is the price of something. Because your decision about Apple at $200, let's just say, is much different than your decision on Apple at $150. $50. Like the price change almost necessitates a different way of looking at things, right? It's a different strategy based on where things are trading. So my only point in saying that is, if you don't have a view here, you can say, you know what, I'm just going to wait, Carter. I'm going to wait, guy, for it to break. It's either going to break to the downside and I'll take advantage of it that way, or we're going to violate that downtrend line and we're going to start to get back on the horse and we're going to move to the upside. And then you can enter a long trade with a very defined stop to the downside. Conversely, if it breaks to the downside, we're not suggesting you short things, but if you are long, maybe that's your exit strategy. I'm going to get out of a long position if and when it breaks the uptrend line.
That's right. And also, just speaking of it, again, lines are subjective. I was very generous with that. Right. One could tighten up that ascending line and could say it already breached.
It already has.
And
that's
so
correct.
I'm trying to say, hey, look, let's give this thing a little bit of wiggle room. But basically, this is much sort of more worrisome than the BKX.
And I don't know if Jacob can do this, and I apologize, Jacob, but if you could pull up a real-time KRE chart with the same time frame, and we can actually, in real time, show you what Carter's talking about in terms of drawing a different trend line. And if you can't do it, I apologize. But this will be interesting because the same thing happened in Tesla. You had a violation of the uptrend line. Then you had a move back higher to test the line that was just violated, and then it fell off a cliff. So if you look right here, I think that's the same time. I believe that's the same time frame. Maybe not, but you could draw. Yeah, that's the one. So, you know, Carter drew it one way. That's the other way to draw it. So those points violated to the downside, and now maybe a retest of that down of that uptrend line, but we'll see. Anyway, I just wanted to sort of illustrate that real quick. Thank you for that, Jacob. Let's look at a couple individual banks. And again, if you don't have a view, we can push past them. But you know, some of these actually do look pretty interesting. Citibank, for example, which its moving average was flatlining for the longest time. Here we are seemingly starting to trend higher. The stock has sold off a little bit into earnings. It probably all makes sense. But let's look at a Citigroup chart with that 200-day moving average, given the run that it's had. Thoughts here, if any? You know, I could see a little bit of a back and fill here, but I guess my point is, does this change in direction of the moving average suggest anything to you?
Well, the key here, of course, is it's the same general move as JP Morgan. Yes. From that October low to where we are now, and then the slight dip that we're seeing. But just to put this in perspective, Citi up 70%
yes,
versus JP Morgan up 50. And you'd expect that because this is the nature of beta. This is a lower quality bank, right? More international exposure than perhaps any bank in many ways. And so it's boom bust. It's weaker on the way down, stronger on a bounce. But my hunch is that this small dip is not enough to correct that 70% advance.
I agree with that. Let's look at, if we can jump to Wells Fargo, and this is the duration chart that we pulled up, but I'm going to ask Jacob to do something. So if you pull up a longer term chart, you'll see that the level that we're at now, sort of this 57 or so level, oddly enough, Carter, was the same level we topped out at, there you go, if you go longer term, in February of 2022. So here you are. You know, a prior level of resistance we've gotten back to. I mean, you talk about things like this all the time. So if you've been long the stock for the last however many years, you know, you're back from this point to break even effectively. Moving average working in your favor. But theoretically, there should be, again, this is just my view, a lot of resistance here in the form of, I guess, you know, overhang in shares type of thing. You talk about it all the time.
There is. I mean, not that many shares changed hands at that prior top. As you can see, it was just a brief period. But the reason it's consolidating is just as you've implied, it's back to a former high. And typically, you get stuck at a former high before either failing there or breaking out. The one thing to note is that when we look at the period, it's been stalling for more weeks. Citi and JP Morgan only just now starting to come off. And so on a relative basis, its performance is a little bit poor compared to those other two big ones. Pair of twos for me here.
BlackRock is interesting. Obviously, an extraordinarily important company, about $120 billion market cap. So let's pull up BLK. You will see, like many technology stocks, this made its all-time high, like many things, in the fall, specifically in November of 2021. I think it was around $1,000-ish, maybe slightly below. We haven't traded all that well over the last couple of years. A lot of sideways action here. This, to me, does not suggest anything other than continued sideways action. But am I looking at this incorrectly?
Yeah, pair of twos. I mean, this is, again, there's that great expression, sometimes the best investments, the ones you never make. You just don't have to play. And I would say that's the play here. Don't play.
Let's take a look at something from earlier. April 2nd, Dan detailed a on-market call, a bearish trade in the financials in the XLF. I think the current idea was the trade was around 41.65. He bought the April 19th 41.50 put for 43 cents. That was it on April 2nd. So you can take a look. You can see what the profits were, the levels, the different things. Okay, let's sort of do real-time update and see where we are now if we can. And Dan's idea is rolling down and rolling out. So you have something working for you now. So obviously this actually worked out. Well, I shouldn't say worked out, but it's working in his favor rather quickly. I mean, the timing of this was very good. So he's selling to close the April 19th, 41.5 put at about $1.13, give or take. That's a 70 cent gain. He's buying to open a May 17th, $40 put for 63 cents. So he's using some of the leverage, some of the success of the trade to obviously roll out and down to a different level. The break-even price is now $39.37. So this is an interesting strategy. Some people might say, you know what? You could have taken that profit, put it in your pocket, walked away. Dan is saying, you know what? We're going to roll down and roll out. Given what you just talked about in terms of some of the charts you were looking at, my sense is you think this is probably the right course of action.
Yeah, and here too, it's the general uncorrected nature of the past 6 months, the magnitude of the move, how far it is above trend, and is there further downside risk? If we went to a very short-term chart of this, you'll see today's intraday reversal. Just look at a 1 or 2 month chart, and you'll see today's bar, mm-hmm. right? A low, and then we've reversed that. That's also the case with the general market. But you know, that's an important circumstance to recover after taking an initial hit.
A lot of volatility. I mean, the volatility and just in terms of the S&P the last couple of days and some of these individual names is something to watch. Retail, we sort of focused on that during our tease earlier in the show. You brought with you a bunch of retail charts. Let's run through them.
Right. So the first was TJ, and I wanted to look at that and then look at maybe the group, right? The XRT, which is some 200. It's got everything from Walmart to Amazon in there. So we have some charts, and let's chop some wood together. This is TJX. Mm-hmm. Now, I just speaking of being generous or less generous, the line, I did it in this instance. So let's go and toggle and look. Now watch that ever so slight toggling back and forth. So if one's the very slight difference, but a slight difference, have we broken trend? Or have we not? It depends on where you want to put that line. The question is this uptrend intact or is this a little bit of a stall? A little bit of a double top. I'd be a little bit worried here. This is a case where if I were long, I would sell calls and hedge.
It's interesting because we're starting earnings season tomorrow. TJX doesn't report until May 22nd. So you have some time in this thing. But again, I think it makes sense in terms of if you've enjoyed the gains, you know, you see where we are right now. Now you can say, you know what, I'm going to wait for the violation of that trend line, Carter. That's fine as well. But it's definitely something to look at a month or so into their earnings release. Let's look at some more stuff here.
Sure. So I think what we can do now is let's look at
XRT.
The whole, right, exactly. So this is everything. It's from Chewy's to Foot Locker, any store, to, you know, anything you can think of. And now this is showing the plunge of the 2022, the basing, and very similar, of course, to what? The IWM, mm-hmm. because it's a lot of small cap stocks. So it's equal weight too. Let's put some lines in. So this is the issue. We breakout that is not working, right? A bit of a failure here. Let's put in the uptrend line that's in effect since this last move. We're breaching that line. Let's give it one more line. And so the question is, what do you do with that? The truth is you call it a pair of twos. Why get chopped up in all that? It's just, it got a little bit above a false breakout and now stumbling a bit. It could go all the way to the midpoint. You could stop here and back and fill. The point is, I just would kind of stay away from that.
Well, it's interesting because this is the ratio charts always fascinate me. And again, you know, you talk about performance, but when you measure something against an index, in this case, the XRT versus the SPY, this is when things get really interesting, and you can see the complete underperformance of the space over this period of time.
Right. And so what we have here, of course, two lines, two colors, it's a comparative chart, one and the other. The other way to do it, of course, is a relative. And so the next one is simply one divided by the other. And that really shows that basically XRT was making new 2 and 3 year lows just recently, trying to base and bottom, but not convincing really. And so remarkably, the takeaway from this is that it's still better to be in the SPY. Mm-hmm. And yet we're sitting here saying the SPY is extended. So
right.
how do you square that? You don't have to. The truth is XRT is not really working. And in this instance, sometimes aggregates are not the thing to do. You find an individual name, whether it's a TJX or what have you.
Well, that's it. It's interesting. How do you square that, right? I mean, how does this reconcile itself? I mean, there are a number of ways for these things to reconcile. The most logical way for me is a sell-off in the SPY with the XRT not really doing much of anything, you know, in terms of not keeping up with, to the downside, the underperformance of the SPY. So if the broader market were to sell off, my sense is it would be on the back of technology. Maybe the XRT catches a sort of a bid on the back of money flows, and you could see how this thing reconciles it with a broader market sell-off vis-a-vis technology. But again, that's what makes markets.
That's what makes markets. And this is a sloppy, if this were an individual stock currency, we're looking at it, we'd say, it's kind of a bearish to bullish reversal, but it's foundering here a bit. Maybe leave it alone.
Question from John. My approach to investing in the stock market has evolved to a point where currently I would say I rely on fundamentals to indicate what I should invest in and on technical analysis to determine when I should buy or sell. If I recognize what appears to be an incomplete head and shoulders pattern on a price chart, how likely is the pattern to eventually complete and then turn up or down, depending on whether it's inverted or not? That's right up the Carter Worth alley.
So there are head and shoulders tops and there are head and shoulders bottoms. And the formations were named by the original book writers in the 30s and 40s. My own teacher and mentor was in that, started in the Fidelity chart room in the 1960s. And no one believed them, right? There were no computers. And so cups and handles, don't you see it? Looks like a cup and handle. Don't you see a head and shoulders? It's not really what you call it. What it is they're reversal formations, mm-hmm. right? And so they're not infallible, but they have a high hit rate. And so one can try to anticipate and see the right shoulder of a head and shoulders top or the right shoulder of head and shoulders bottom. But quite often, if you sort of look out too far, now you're just looking in the clouds. You know, if you lie on your back on a beautiful day in the meadow, you can see anything you want in the clouds.
Right.
And so to some extent, it's usually better to wait for a very clear chart formation and then play the resolution rather than anticipating the chart formation and then playing the resolution.
Carter Worth is an absolute gentleman. You should follow Worth Charting. Get it in your inbox. I don't know if we have the slide. If we don't, we can put it in the show notes, but it's always great when you join us. Thanks for doing this an hour later. From there you go. Worth Charting. Old-fashioned technical analysis. Nothing slick, just charts. You know the way I look at it. But that's a great picture, by the way. What do you think? That's circa what?
I don't know. It's not, but yes, I look like you. I got a blazer on.
I know. I'm all knotted up today.
Yep.
But that's it. Folks, Carter, thank you for joining us. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow, obviously, earnings starts in earnest. I'm not here next week, but don't worry. Dan, Nathan, Carter Worth, Elizabeth Young, everybody will be here. Have a good day, folks. We'll see you soon.